Okay. Today we're interviewing John and Mary France about their home in Monroe. Why don't you tell us about the solar features you designed into your house, John?
Well, we had experimented with adding solar panels to an older house and making calculations about what the consequences would be. And it became obvious that you could do a lot better with the new design. So that you have storage of heat automatically with concrete construction. Mm-hmm. So our house has FlexiCore for the basement ceiling and the floor of the main area. In the basement it's half finished, so that's a lot of heat that can be stored and restored depending on the sun shining and so forth.
And all of the windows, essentially all the windows in the house are on the south side. Uh-huh. Three tiers of windows, the basement, the first floor, and a clerestory. And the light to the north rooms comes from the clerestory through indoor windows. Uh-huh. So there's no north windows at all.
And at night?
And there's movable insulation for all the windows, which is quilts running in tracks so that the air doesn't circulate behind the quilts. Mm-hmm. And then insulated quilts comparable to a ski jacket.
So that keeps the cold air at night from cooling off the house. Yeah.
And other windows have panels of insulating panels, Thermax, that both in the basement and the clerestory, and they can be closed. And we got all of that work done by Creative Energy, who were very creative about solving those problems.
Good. In fact, I was a volunteer for an experimental project that Randy Korda was involved with back years ago when the Thermax panels were being experimented with to see whether they pre-market field test.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, he was the one who designed our system. We were very happy with it.
Uh-huh. And we also had the insulating curtains on our house in Lake Wisconsin on the south-facing side that were made by Creative Energy Projects. And accordion-style ones in our case, and they were insulated, and they had flaps that closed over the edges to seal them off at night.
And we have R35 in the walls and R55 in the ceiling. Uh-huh. And it's kind of an ego trip for the carpenter who helped us. We got the utility to put one of those calibrated fans in the main door. And we were 10 times tighter than anything they'd ever tested.
Wow.
So our house was very well constructed, thanks to our carpenter.
He even taped the staple lines where the viscreen was stapled to the rafters. Hmm.
So this is a standard test procedure that the power company does for how tightly sealed your house is?
Infiltration,
correct.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Wow.
As a result, the house is practically draft-free, so it doesn't have to be kept as warm in order for you to feel warm. Mm-hmm. But with a wood-burning stove, we can keep it plenty warm anyway.
So and our air intake for the wood-burning stove is through multiple 3-inch aluminum dryer ducts that pass through the wood cellar so as to cool the wood cellar.
That's in the house?
Yeah.
Because you have to have an air-to-air heat exchange with that tight a house or you would be uncomfortable with no fresh air.
So have you ever compared the energy efficiency of your house with a typical house of that size?
No, but we weighed all the wood we burned for the first 2 years.
Uh-huh. And is wood your only source of heat?
Well, we have the hot water heater rigged up so it can impersonate a furnace, but it hardly ever does. And our marginal the hot the gas is essentially for hot water because our gas bill is so small that the investment on solar water heater was justified. And so the increased gas bill in the winter months compared to the summer months in those first 3 years was only $20 a year. And counting wood at $100 a cord, that means the heating bill was $120. But we didn't pay for the wood, but we weighed it all so that it was a fair test. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, when you weigh your wood, dry wood, it doesn't matter how many cords it was, because if it's willow, you have to put a lot more in the wheelbarrow before it weighs the same.
Right. It has less heat content. It's a less dense wood.
But by the pound, the different kinds of wood are quite comparable. Mm-hmm.
So in the winter, your heat is sun and wood primarily.
Yeah.
And your water heater could contribute a little bit if necessary.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about your garden.
Well, I guess a lot of people have gardens, and our garden isn't outstanding.
A little bigger than most.
It's a little bigger, and right now it's a lot bigger than we need. It's a garden with raised beds, and it's 50 feet by 50 feet with 18 of these beds, but they're not all for garden. Just got one whole bed's for compost and one's for grapevines. And now we've recently been sharing some with some neighbors who want a garden because it's so much.
And how do you water your garden?
Well, we collect rainwater throughout the months when it isn't freezing, and we have rain barrels all over the garden which we can siphon the water into from a main barrel that drains off the roof. And so we rarely use the hose for gardening. But our whole water system in our house is primarily cistern rainwater. We have city water, but each facility has a city water tap, but we don't use it very much. We use it for drinking cold water and brushing our teeth, but for our hot water for making tea or coffee, we use the rainwater and for cooking.
And each time it rains, this barrel that collects it has to fill up, and there's a standpipe above that that gets it high enough to go into the basement, so the roof is rinsed by a barrel of water before it goes into the cistern, and that reduces an awful lot of cistern cleaning requirement.
The cistern is a whole room in the basement that was at the time we built it.
How many gallons?
9,000 and something.
Wow.
And that's more than enough for all of you.
We're still extremely thrifty water users because we've done enough backpacking where you carried all your water that we know you don't have to use a whole lot of water.
Uh-huh. And then the garden has a big tank that collects the rainwater.
It has 10 different 55-gallon drums around, plastic drums.
At the time, the brewery was buying some additive in those barrels, and it wasn't worth the freight sending them back, so they gave them away.
So we acquired them during a phase when they were giving them away. They didn't cost us anything. Uh-huh. Buying barrels.
Are they made out of steel?
No, they're heavy plastic.
Heavy plastic, okay.
Food quality plastic went into the beer. Our garden, in addition, the raised beds permit you to garden somewhat earlier because they drain well. And we have some plastic domes that we can put over the beds to start things earlier.
Oh.
And
you can start spinach in the fall, and it goes dormant under the snow and comes on it in the spring weeks before you could get new spinach to germinate.
So it stays dormant all winter and then takes off in the spring.
And you get fresh spinach several weeks before you could possibly get it in the spring. And peas can germinate in remarkably cold weather. Mary's been known to shovel snow to plant peas.
Well, really, there are a lot of people who have equally or more successful gardens than ours, but we've learned a lot over the years in gardening.
Well, probably the most unique thing about our garden is we have 23 blueberry bushes, and we figured out how to do it without adjusting the pH of the soil.
Really?
Yeah, we dug 4 feet deep and put drainage tile in the bottom and plastic all around. And then we put some old roofing in on top of the drainage tile, and we filled it up with sandy pine woods soil from along the Wisconsin River. And we keep adding pine needles, so the soil stays acid for the same reason that it stays acid in its original place.
Wow.
And that eliminates the need for testing and chemicals and getting the dose wrong. And blueberry bushes are very fussy. If you put in one dose of ordinary fertilizer, it doesn't just discourage them, it kills them.
So you are successful blueberry raisers.
It took us several tries to do that. And John makes compost all the time. And we have neighbors who give us their grass clippings and try to mulch our beds, all the things that'll save water and provide fertility for the garden. And all the vegetable matter from the kitchen and the garden goes into the compost. What else?
And legumes do better with more alkali, and you can put wet ashes on garden beds. And in order to avoid needing phosphate fertilizer, we burn the bones in the wood stove, and the bones end up in the wood ashes, and they're much higher in phosphorus than wood ashes because of the bones.
And what bones do you use?
Chicken bones and pork bones and lamb bones. And
sounds like a good use for them. Any other tips for gardeners that can reduce their impact on their our environment?
Well, we started our garden. We had bought a lot. It was all grass. And instead of digging up this whole 50 by 50 foot plot, we started, even a year or two before we built the house, planting a crop on it and covering it with 6 or 8 inches of hay, mulch, and then that killed the grass. And meanwhile, we had melons or potatoes or whatever it was growing in the covered lawn, so we didn't have to dig up all 18 beds ourselves.
And there were a bunch of walnut and butternut trees back there. And there was a power line diagonally across, and I called the power company and said, I'm going to cut down these trees. What number should I call if I knock the power line down? And they came out and cut them down for me. I didn't even ask.
So you don't have any black walnuts around?
No, we got rid of those and planted fruit trees.
What kind of fruit trees?
Well, the pear trees do very well. We've had good luck with pear trees. We've had peach trees that last a few years and then tend not to survive. And we have some cherry trees that we compete with the birds and get a few cherries.
And we had some plums at the beginning, but it's pretty hard to grow plums without using chemicals. The same worms affect cherries, but they taste like cherries, so it doesn't matter.
The worms taste like cherries?
No, that's what he means. You still get the fruit. You have to remove the worm from the cherry. Whereas the plum trees, they just die and fall off the tree before they form.
I think it's quite likely that the worms taste like cherries.
Meaning the cherries.
You might have been and
yeah, there's nothing in the worms but cherries.
And our grape crop is extremely successful. We have grapes along about, 100 feet of grapevine,
those Concord grapes? No, we started out with Delaware and Fredonia, and now we have a lot of Foch, which are hybridized European grapes with North American grapes, so you don't need to grow the European grapes on North American rootstocks because of the phylloxera, which is a North American parasite that doesn't permit European grapes to be grown in America. Mm.
And these Foch grapes are primarily a wine grape, but then we have several vines of the eating grapes also.
So do you make wine?
Yep.
Our record grape crop was 400 pounds.
Wow. Did that make quite a lot of wine?
Yeah,
or was that
make quite a lot of wine, yeah.
Yeah, last year we only got about 7 gallons.
Mm-hmm. And some years the wine comes out really quite good, and other years it isn't quite so good, but we're not too proud to mix it with some cheap grocery store wine. And
another thing you can do with it to make it seem better is to bottle it with some sugar in champagne bottles, and it comes out sparkling wine, and that covers some off taste. But you have to get only certain brands of American champagne that Coke bottle type caps will fit on.
Oh. The snap-on kind.
The kind that presses down with all the
crimps around the
edges.
And we grow a lot of raspberries. They're very successful, and we grow rhubarb. Uh-huh. Little strawberries, and then the blueberries. So our garden has fed us and our neighbors and our kids very well.
Do you do any canning?
Oh yes, do a lot of canning and freezing.
And a little bit of drying.
And drying.
You have a dryer.
Yes, when we used to go backpacking a lot, we would dry most of the food we wanted for backpacking.
At one point, we toyed with the idea of getting a freeze-dried setup, but that was a little too elaborate to justify. Freeze-drying preserves quality better than ordinary drying.
Oh. Any concluding remarks for the Green Committee?
For the Green Committee? Well, anybody is welcome to visit our house. Uh-huh. And look at it, and on John's website there's a description of the house and
photographs.
Some of the features. A few photographs of when it was first built.
Uh-huh. And what's the web URL?
www.francemd.info.
Okay. Very good.
And there's an article on there about how to drive a Prius to get better mileage than Toyota knows how to get.
That's a separate subject. It's a green subject.
You have a Prius as well.
Yeah,
and our mileage has gone up from the low 50s. When we bought it, 5 years later, we're getting it in the mid-60s.
Really? Wow, that's good. Our Prius mileage went up a bit too, but not that high.
Well, the trick is never use the brakes except in an emergency. Uh-huh. You know about that thing to slow it down going downhill without using the brakes? It's called B. And
on your gear shift, it's B off to the right.
It's described as engine braking, but what it really does, it cuts in an extra generator that slows it down more than the original. Electric motor.
I'm not sure we have that on our Prius. What year is yours?
5 years ago.
2006?
Yeah.
Or is it 2008?
Well, yeah, well, it's, they wouldn't have removed that. It says B on the dashboard when you just like says Rooster Drive.
Don't recall seeing any B on our little display.
Okay, so they might have changed the letter. Look in your owner's manual if you can make head or tail out of it.
Okay, well, that's interesting to know.
And do you know how the Prius electric system is made so reliable?
How?
Well, of course, a motor and a generator can be the same device. Mm-hmm. And the Toyota has a 27 horsepower electric motor generator with no commutator, which is the main maintenance problem in electrical equipment. And the way they achieve that is an enormously powerful permanent magnet in the rotor, which contains several kilograms of one of the rare earth metals that permits ferrous metals to retain a permanent magnetism better than anything can be done with iron, nickel, and cobalt.
Well,
I think that's all we have to say.
Very good. Thank you very much.